chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a very, very good program going this evening, and we're going to start off with Alex's interview with Thomas Rentz. And he starts off with a bang and describing exactly what's been going on with the development of this gain of function, you could say vaccine and virus and so forth, and hits it out of the park. So here we go with Thomas Rentz with Alex.
We have a situation where a U.S. entity sponsored by a government agency who oversees biological weapons and weapons development and security issues, partnering and giving the technology to a communist foreign state that's an avowed enemy of the United States to do gain-of-function research, which is the key to bioweapons development, in a lab with known ties to the CCP bioweapons program. Are you going to tell me that we transferred that technology, that we funded those programs, and that our DOD and intel community didn't know? If that's the case, we have the least competent intelligence community on the planet, but that's not the case. I don't believe that for a second. Plus, when you start throwing in the evidence we have that the CIA was involved with or had knowledge of or was working with EcoHealth Alliance, there's no question. What we're seeing, though, is kind of this breakdown. So Fauci and his crew and some of the globalists, they're hung up on continuing to push death shots and vaccines and other such things because they need it. They need this, right? So the question is, when and how do you roll these things out? Now, they're doing more gain of function, more war games. And what we've heard, and this is what we've heard. I can't prove this. I don't have papers. But we've heard that the plan is to have something big hit around the time that they get the support necessary to move forward with the new WHO treaty. They want to get that new WHO treaty, which is really just a rehash of the same thing. They want the WHO to have power to take over the world. Okay, so that's a cornerstone piece of what they're doing, and they want to do whatever they got to do to get that in. The problem is that our fight, particularly here in the U.S., has been too powerful. Guys like McCullough, you know, I've had a little part in it, and all these different people who are pushing this, we've had a voice. We've made a voice thanks to people like you, Alex, who've let us talk. And so there's a problem, you know, because it's politically, it doesn't look sustainable here in the U.S. And the other side of this is that if they lose, they know that there's a real likelihood, if people realize how many millions of people these guys have killed, that they're going to end up at the end of a rope.
The devil sends the beast with wrath because he knows his time is short. This is the death throes of Satan's kingdom on this planet. And they're coming for our children. They're coming for us because they're throwing a fit. They know they've lost. Well, Tom Rentz, for 2.5+ years, has been battling the tyranny, the lockdowns, the poison shots, all of it. And I knew early on he was really having a big effect with his lawsuits. But he'd be on air like 2 years ago saying, well, I've got the big whistleblower. We'll release the name soon. And they were the high level inside the whole operation. And then it comes out, it's the vice president of EcoHealth Alliance and the chief scientist. And now the book's out there, The Truth About Wuhan, with Dr. Andrew Huff. Both of them were on this morning. Harris and Smith, I didn't have the time to do it, but I ended up sitting there in my office for like 40 minutes watching it going, man, this is really a good interview, really powerful. So we're blessed to have him on with us today. I'm glad he could come on my show to talk about this, because this is smoking gun stuff, okay? And the death numbers worldwide by the insurance companies, smoking gun. And we talked about it 1.5 years ago about the insurance numbers, but now it's mainstream news. And now there's talk of grand juries, and grand juries are being impaneled statewide with the Supreme Court. You know the governor's going to be successful getting those going. So big success. Praise God. Thank all those that God worked through. That means people that called, people that wrote Congress, people that supported. That means this audience. That means everybody. We have really gotten off our flat feet and into a fighting stance here to not just go quietly into the night. And the system is in a chicken with the head cut off, absolute panic mode. So, Attorney Tom Renz, my BS detector didn't go off, thought he was really credible, looked him up, saw he was doing great work, but I'm like, he's got the former chief scientist, and it was true, and so many other whistleblowers. So it isn't about credit. He doesn't come on here about credit, but we need to celebrate the people that have had the courage to take action and tell us what was coming next, because now he can tell us what's coming next after this and his predictions of what the enemy is going to pull, because we are really winning. Renz-law.com, Renz-law.com. God bless you, sir, for your great work. I'm going to try to let you pretty much just have the floor here and just cover the waterfront. But, man, this is just a crazy time to be alive.
Well, you got it, Alex. And I got to tell you, it's really, and I mean this sincerely, and, I sat with you in your studio, so you've looked me in the eyes. So you know when I say this, I mean it. I am truly honored to get that kind of praise from you. I mean that. You've been fighting this, and you've stood through hell that most people wouldn't even think of, and it is 100% God. It is 100% faith. We have families. We have our future. We have our country on the line, and we either stand together and fight for this, or we lose everything. So we will win this. So as God is my witness, I'll stand against the gates of hell if I got it. We will win this. We've stood pretty damn close to it right now already. So, yeah. Yeah, so I wasn't pulling your chain at all when I told you I had some pretty big whistleblowers. Andrew is an amazing guy, and not only is he a whistleblower who worked there, but you got to look at his credibility. Combat vet, master's in security technology, PhD in environmental epidemiology, worked at Sandia National Labs, had uber top secret clearance. I mean, this guy is rock solid credible. And if that's not enough, remember, when we released the initial report that included his declaration that he gave me under oath, under penalty of perjury, when we released that, we also included 130-some citations in a separate report that didn't cite anything he said.
And let's remember, they came to his house and shot at him. I mean, that's how real this is.
You have no idea. So I actually... it took months before I could really believe some of the stories Andrew was telling me. I actually, his house is literally in the middle of nowhere. I'm not going to say it to anybody where it is, but I'm going to tell you that this guy lives off grid, remote, it couldn't be more out there. I actually went to his house and spent full day going around, looking at his evidence, looking at what had happened, and personally checking everything out. I was gone. It was a two-day trip to get there.
Well, what do you expect? So, he was the vice president and the chief scientist. They were in full panic mode. He's blessed to even be alive right now.
Oh, they're actually in bigger panic mode now. And, you know, the thing is they don't even know. Like, they don't know some of the other whistleblowers I've got. I've got whistleblowers that are showing the conspiracy in the hospitals to murder patients. I've got audio recordings. I've got papers. I got so much stuff. This is a warm up. We're just getting started. We will have accountability. I cannot wait to see it happen. And I'm going to tell you, we've been so careful and so diligent about making sure that
you've been led by God, because everything you've done has been devastating the enemy. You definitely have the Holy Spirit's hand on you.
Well, I absolutely will tell you the big man has shown me a lot of favor, a lot more than I probably deserve. But, you know, I try to earn it every day. I'm never worthy of it. But we have huge stuff coming. You got to understand the thing that really gets them on this. And I'm going to tell you, I want to stress this. The thing that scares them more than anything else that I get the most blowback on. Okay. So get ready for the signal to go down, right? The thing I get the most blowback on is the tie-ins between the intelligence community and DOD on this. See, no one wants the Congress to investigate the DOD and the intel communities, but they are 100% involved. We've got the receipts.
And when I say we got the receipts, I mean we got the receipts.
And that's where I was going next. They had the neocons come out today with a report saying the Chinese released it. I hate the Chinese communists. They're horrible, but we know it wasn't the Chi-Coms. So they're so desperate now, they're admitting it's man-made, vindicating everything we said, but blaming the Chinese. That's panic mode.
Well, that's saying something. I'm going to embed that full interview on thesecrettruth.com. So come into thesecrettruth.com and I'll have that whole interview with Alex embedded. Coming up next is Tammy Bruce subbing for Sean Hannity, and she gets into the Twitter and Turley. Also, not only is James Comer, U.S. representative, interviewed, but Turley, university professor, law professor, is also interviewed, and he gives some really good detail about the legal aspects of the Twitter problem and the Twitter scandal. So here we go with Tammy Bruce subbing for Sean Hannity.
Welcome to this special edition of Hannity. I'm Tammy Bruce, in for Sean tonight. And tonight, the Christmas season is in full swing. So let's begin with the gift that keeps on giving, the Twitter files. Just hours ago, in all seriousness, you guys, a new batch was published by journalist Matt Taibbi. Now, irrefutable proof that your government was directing Twitter to censor Americans. According to Taibbi, quote, Twitter's contact with the FBI was constant and pervasive, as if it were a subsidiary. Between January 2020 and November 2022, there were over 150 emails between the FBI and former Twitter trust and safety chief, Yoel Roth. Taibbi continued, a surprisingly high number are requests by the FBI for Twitter to take action on election misinformation, even involving joke tweets from low follower accounts. For example, many of these tweets look like this. No likes, no comments, no retweets, just a message telling Democrats to vote on Wednesday, a day after the election. Ha ha ha. Apparently, the federal government believed that joke tweets like this were a threat to democracy. In fact, they were so worried about misinformation after the 2016 election, the FBI dedicated dozens of agents to comb through social media posts year-round. As Taibbi reports, the ubiquity of the 2016 Russian interference story as a stated pretext for building out the censorship machine can't be overstated. It's analogous to how September 11th inspired the expansion of the security state. Through hundreds of meetings, phone calls, and emails, Twitter was getting a constant stream of censorship requests from multiple individuals at the FBI, the DHS, state government officials, even government contractors. As Taibbi concludes, quote, what most people think of as the deep state is really a tangled collaboration of state agencies, private contractors, and sometimes state-funded NGOs. The lines become so blurred as to be meaningless. In other words, the Washington swamp was constantly directing big tech to censor speech they did not like, including jokes and satire. Meh. That seems more fitting for the Soviet Union than the United States of America. Here now with reaction, incoming House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer. Sir, thank you very much for joining me tonight. I obviously am upset. I think most Americans are upset. This is a nonpartisan issue, right? But this transcends anything else that we might be thinking about each other, because what keeps this nation secure and stable is the Constitution and the belief, it should be the reality that the American people are genuinely free. We see nothing ever happen to people who do this kind of thing, who get away with stuff at the IRS, et cetera. You're going to be in charge of looking into this. What can the American people expect from your leadership?
Well, this is serious, and this is going to be a top priority for Republicans on the Oversight Committee. We've been talking about this for three straight weeks. It's increased the attention since Elon Musk has started doing the right thing and becoming transparent at Twitter. You know, my concern was that this was a rogue FBI employee or two, but we knew the FBI was the one communicating with the three Twitter employees, Mr. Roth, Ms. Gaddy, and Mr. Baker that this was Russian disinformation pertaining to the Hunter Biden laptop, which, as you know, we're investigating the entire Biden influence peddling schemes here. But what we found today is the FBI had its own Ministry of Propaganda, 80 FBI agents dedicated to nothing but censoring free speech on the Internet. 80 agents. As someone who's going to be the incoming chairman of the House Oversight Committee, that's roughly $12 million expenses to the taxpayers in salary and benefits. But look at our First Amendment rights. Anyone that cares about free speech should be outraged. Whether you're a Republican or Democrat, this has to stop. This is going to be a top priority for the Republican majority in January.
Well, it has to be, because we also, I think you would agree, that if they were doing this with such ease and with such a huge amount of people, like its own little cottage industry, that this is not the only place where it's happening, that this is the cultural attitude.
Right. I mean, this is just Twitter. Can you imagine what they're doing at Google and Facebook and YouTube and the other social media platform? And what about with the mainstream media? I mean, this is very concerning. And to see what detail this Ministry of Propaganda at the FBI was going to censor parody tweets and things like that. Are you kidding me? I mean, this is serious. What else are they involved in at the FBI? The entire FBI needs to be dismantled. We need to start all over. We need to enact strict reforms, and there need to be checks and balances at the FBI.
Well, and before we are even able to get to that, sir, we've got to get to the truth of the matter, and no one ever cooperates. I trust, though, that you are going to expand this beyond Twitter. You mentioned Google. You mentioned perhaps Facebook, Meta in general, with Instagram. Are you going to expand and include those platforms, which we also know, at least from Mark Zuckerberg, he too was contacted by the FBI. I think we only know a portion of that. Are you going to expand this investigation?
Yes, this is going to take several committees focusing a lot of attention. Big tech is going to be a priority for the Republican majority. You're going to have the Energy and Commerce Committee. You're going to have the House Intelligence Committee. You're going to have the House Judiciary Committee. And you're going to have the House Oversight Committee. All committees are investigating certain areas where there need to be oversight. But one thing's becoming a pattern here is that the FBI was involved in censorship in every form or fashion, whether it's with the election, whether it's with the Biden agenda. I mean, they have stepped in where the government does not belong. And this has to end. What? People have to be held accountable. And we're going to have to start with the budget. That's what's so frustrating about what's going on right now in Washington.
Let me stop you right there. Sir, let me stop you right there. We want to see things get done. We know you can pull everything into the swamp and everything into the volcano, and it's about the budget. We want some results. And at this point, it's been the United States of the FBI, and that is unacceptable to the American people. And I love that you understand this. I want to thank you for joining me tonight. I want to talk now with Jonathan Turley, who's kind enough to join us, who certainly has his perspective as a law professor and dealing with a lot of these issues, to say the least. So thank you, Congressman Comer. Now, per usual, you know, the FBI, Jonathan, he says the FBI has to be dismantled, et cetera. The FBI has admitted no wrongdoing. Let me start with this. They've admitted no wrongdoing. Why would they? Writing in a statement here, sir, quote, the Bureau regularly engages with private sector entities that make decisions about what, if any, action they take on their platforms and for their customers after the FBI has notified them. Fox News contributor Jonathan Turley, what is your reaction to that kind of a statement with what we know now from this recent drop of the Twitter files?
Well, you know, Tammy, what's disturbing about the statement is it shows absolutely no self-awareness of what has already been disclosed. I mean, it's showing utter contempt for the American people. The FBI could have said, look, we find these allegations disturbing. We're going to conduct our own immediate investigation to see if these types of contacts went too far. And instead, they're just saying, well, we did nothing but correspond with companies. That is not what these new files are suggesting. They're suggesting censorship by surrogate, by proxy. You have dozens of FBI agents who supposedly were tasked to go through social media. You have 150 contacts with just one Twitter executive giving lists of users that should be banned, including satirical sites. There's very little runway left for the FBI to continue to deny that there isn't a serious problem here. People, I think, largely agree, I hope, that while the First Amendment applies to the government, it also applies to agents of the government. So if the FBI uses a proxy, uses an agent like Twitter, it's still censorship. It's still a violation of the First Amendment.
You know, what's interesting here, too, and I think that Americans are frustrated because with the FBI, they seem, whether it was, you know, the Russia dossier hoax, you know, their interference, some argue in the 2016 and 20 elections, is that nothing ever seems to happen. Are we missing something that Congress can do other than have reality television, committees, every day? Is there something that can be done immediately, especially with your remarks about their statement, which effectively confirms that they seem to be fine. They knew about it. They weren't outraged or shocked. What are the options here?
Well, obviously, it's going to take some time to build the type of case for substantive change. I don't think most people are talking about dismantling the FBI. I think what the representative is probably talking about is dismantling these troublesome components of the FBI, if there is a censorship program going on. And we
Right.
do need to look at that, but a case has to be made. These files are not just an indictment of the FBI, they're an indictment of Congress. Congress has shown a steadfast refusal to dig into the censorship allegations. Many of us have been writing about this for years. The Democratic members have refused to pursue this. And in fact, Democratic members have pushed social media companies to expand censorship. You know, in the very hearing where Jack Dorsey apologized for the Hunter Biden laptop debacle, the immediate reaction of Democratic senators were to tell him, don't backslide on us. We want more censorship. Well, now we have not just censorship. We have blacklisting. We have these shadow bans. All of that is now open to the public. And so in some ways, Musk has forced people to choose sides. And I think that some of the anger that you see in the media borders on self-loathing. I mean, they're having now to embrace not just being censorship apologists, but blacklisting and shadow banning and also lying, because that's what we've seen for the last 3 years. That's a lot to take on yourself and still claim that you're a journalist or you believe in free speech. So it's going to take a while, but I cannot tell you how long overdue this is. We need to see it all, and hopefully the House is going to pursue that.
Well, great stuff, and you have been, of course, one of them. This has been on your plate for years, and an excellent point about Congress and their abdicated responsibility or their complicitness with, like, the Democrats. I mean, for those of us who are classical liberals, you know, we used to be, against the government spying on us. It's like we're in some kind of netherworld. Jonathan Turley, thank you very much for joining me tonight. I appreciate it. Now, keep in mind,
all these scandals, these are just outrageous criminal acts, what they are. But, we've got Tucker Carlson interviewing Miranda Devine on the JFK, the recently released files, documents. And this is her take, and she's really a stand-up lady. She added the Biden, Hunter Biden laptop way back, wrote a book about it. But anyway, she's a stand-up lady, fine person. So here we go with that interview.
We asked Pompeo to join us tonight, and though he rarely turns down a televised interview, he refused to come. We hope he will reconsider. In the meantime, we are happy to be joined tonight by New York Post columnist Miranda Devine. Miranda, thank you so much for coming on. I don't think we've paused long enough to consider what this means after 60 years when every person involved is dead. We can't see classified information about maybe the pivotal event in modern American history. And now we know why.
Well, Tucker, look, you laid it out really well. And, you know, it used to be that conservatives like me dismissed theories from the left about JFK's assassination as just left-wing conspiracy theories. But over time, I think that the left looks as if they were quite justified in not trusting the intelligence services. And I think the WMD pretext for the Iraq war was a red pill, a slowly dawning red pill for me. And so now you just have to look just on a really basic level. You just look at the fact that 30 years ago, Congress, in a unanimous, bipartisan, unequivocal, unambiguous decision, said that all the JFK files have to be made public. Absolutely no reason to keep them back. As you say, it's almost 60 years ago. Everybody involved is dead. You're not worried about sullying reputations or unmasking a spy overseas. No, there can only be two reasons for it. One is that you're trying to protect the CIA against allegations or revelations that it knew more than it made out about Lee Harvey Oswald. It had a huge file on him. They were investigating him or in contact with him before the assassination, and they didn't do enough to save JFK or protect the president. But you know, is that enough to really keep this secret going for 60 years? I mean, the terrible dawning recognition is that really this is about, as you said, protecting the institution. If the CIA was involved in that assassination, that is the reason that you would want to keep that from the American people, because the fury that would erupt, and this is a bipartisan fury, it'd be the one thing that would unite Americans, is an absolute rage at this unaccountable spy agency that is has decided that it is going to get involved in murdering, assassinating the duly elected American president. For what reason? You know, there would be such a clean out of the CIA. I don't know if it would even survive. And so the trust in our institutions is already at rock bottom. I think it's a mistake for Mike Pompeo not to come on your show, because all this does is fuel more conspiracy theories. The truth is the best disinfectant. And if the CIA did do this, was involved 60 years ago, then it needs to come clean. We need to have a reckoning.
And just to be clear, that was the assessment of someone we spoke to who was directly and personally familiar with the contents of these documents. Not someone who read it on the internet. This is someone who had access to the documents. And I have to say, I don't understand, and I agree with you, secrecy abets evil. And the more secrecy you have, the more evil you're likely to have. So we should minimize the amount of secrecy as a general matter. But I don't understand how John Brennan can go on NBC News every day. He was on today. And no one pauses and asks, like, what is this exactly? 60 years, really? And don't give me the sources and methods BS, by the way, son. Like, we're adults here. What's the real reason? Why does no one ask him that?
Well, the more we see characters from the CIA like John Brennan, like those 51 former intelligence officials who signed that scurrilous letter about Hunter Biden being Russian disinformation, the less impressive they look. These people are in the shadows for a reason, because if you actually saw who they were, look at John Brennan. Would you, knowing what we know now about him, would you really entrust him to run the country's premier spy agency, to have such power to run around the world intervening in other countries' elections? No. So I just don't know what good it does us to have those kind of malevolent people having so much power and using it in our name and causing us all great harm, because we don't know what they're doing.
That's right. Transparency can fix it. It's the only thing they can. And I appreciate your assessment tonight. Marina Devine of the New York Post, thank you.
Well, this Twitter scandal is something else. And also, the JFK documents that were recently released, are not being totally released. Many, different entities that are holding different documents are holding back on releasing some of those. So even those are not being released. We have Jim Jordan quizzing, an official of the, IRS. Talking about Lois Lerner and what happened there, and were they really censoring or keeping out of providing them special tax preference for the Tea Party group. So here we go with that really good interview. Jim Jordan hits it hard.
Opportunity. Well, wonderful. We're happy for you. But you were there when the targeting of conservative groups started then, right?
Apparently it did, but I was not involved in any of that.
Says you were head of exempt, advised the commissioner regarding exempt organization requirements. This all took place in the exempt organization division of the IRS.
Ed, but I did not handle
it. You know anything about it?
I did not handle
it. You work with Lois Lerner?
I did work with Lois.
And you did, but you didn't know anything about the be on the lookout list or anything like that?
I was not aware of those particular.
When did you first find out that the IRS was targeting conservative people and this whole double standard that I just mentioned was going on right in the very division that you were supposed to be advising and overlooking?
Sure, I appreciate the question. I would disagree with characterization of targeting, but I was at the meeting.
Well, you don't think people were targeted?
Don't believe they were. I think there was
a list that had three terms: 9/12, Tea Party, and conservative. If those terms come up, you got put on the list.
Yeah, I absolutely appreciate the question, and I.
You don't think it was targeting the President of the United States?
I believe
at the
IRS was doing its best to do its job and didn't have the resources and was trying to find ways of accomplishing.
This isn't about resources. This is about targeting specific points of view, Mr. Hackney.
I understand that.
The Attorney General and the President of the United States had a big press conference when it became public and said, we're going to get to the bottom of this. They talked about possible criminal liability, and you're saying it didn't even exist in the very division that you were head of?
I'm not saying it didn't exist. I'm not saying that they were not looking at Tea Party organizations, but I'm also saying that they were looking at many different other organizations, as you'll see from various reports that came out later.
That is not true. That is not what the Inspector General said. And frankly, if it was just, you know, we were looking at everyone the same, I don't think Lois Lerner would have taken the fifth when she sat right where you were sitting here today. But I got to get to Mr. Fenton in my last 2 minutes and 30 seconds here. $2 billion since 2001, right, Mr. Fitton? That's what the Clinton Foundation took in. Is that right? $2 billion?
Numbers like that I've seen.
$48 million in speeches, I think you said in your opening statements. That we did the math. You said like 200 something. That's like $250,000 for every single speech. He's pretty good. I mean, I've heard him speak, but that is amazing. And then you said in 2008, when Secretary Clinton became secretary, there was an agreement I think in your testimony you said there are certain things she had to do for the duration of her appointment. She would not be involved in all this money that the Clinton Foundation was taking in and all the speeches that her husband was doing, right? She wouldn't be signing off or making decisions about that. Is that right?
Yeah.
And the Clinton Foundation would disclose its donors. So there was an agreement that she worked out when she was Senate confirmed.
Right.
Okay. Did they follow the agreement?
No. And not in my view, at least.
So they had to get permission for her to be Secretary of State and continue to do all the things they did. They got permission, they got the okay, and then they didn't follow it.
No, they immediately began, the foundation immediately contacted Ms. Aberdeen, who worked closely with Mrs. Clinton, to start getting things done for foundation supporters, as I've described. And it's not what I described, the emails.
So the secretary, she kept her part of the deal, but she just had her lawyer, her chief of staff, sign off on everything. Is that sort of how it worked?
Yeah, Aberdeen did the heavy lifting there, yeah.
Yeah. You think there's a double standard right now in America, Mr. Fenton?
Oh, yeah. Mrs. Clinton's being protected by and was protected and, frankly, still is being protected from the consequences of her behavior at the State Department and subsequently.
My colleague from Virginia talked about some things that have happened recently with Mr. Cohen, but I think it's interesting. I don't remember anyone associated during the Clinton investigation. I don't remember anyone associated with the Clinton investigation. Well, first of all, they didn't even call it an investigation. Remember what they were told to call it?
Matter.
Yeah, we're supposed to call it a matter, right? It was obviously an investigation, but it was told to be called a matter. I don't remember Cheryl Mills getting her door kicked in at 5 a.m. and having everything confiscated. I don't remember that at all. In fact, she worked out a deal ahead of time, got immunity before she even turned over any of her records or communications. Is that right?
Yeah, I'd like to, you know, I would just love the committees or someone to investigate. We're doing it separately, Judicial Watch, but to find out whether or not, as reports suggest, the foundation investigation the FBI was conducting in 2016 was actively suppressed by the Justice Department and curtailed. You know, public reports are that FBI agents were only able to read newspaper articles as part of their investigation. They were denied subpoenas and other basic tools available to them.
Yeah.
And when you compare and contrast the special counsel investigation into President Trump and his associates, that's what a real investigation looks like.
Yeah.
Abuses aside, we haven't had anything comparable even during the Clinton email issue.
Yeah.
Certainly this is tied to the Clinton email issue.
Mr. Chairman, I know I'm a little over time, but if I could real quick, I didn't expect to spend as much time on Mr. Hackney denying that there was targeting at the IRS. But You're I think exactly right. I've never seen this happen, Mr. Fitton, where the director of the FBI is fired, the deputy director is fired, the chief legal counsel is demoted, then leaves, FBI counsel Lisa Page is demoted, then leaves, and Peter Strzok, deputy head of counterintelligence at the FBI, is demoted and then fired. I've never seen that happen. But what's interesting, those are the same people who ran the Clinton investigation and started and launched the Russian investigation. Never seen that happen to any other federal agency, even as bad as the IRS was. They only had a couple people, and none of them got fired. They just left. They're still getting a pension. So I've never seen anything like that. And the other thing that always strikes me as sort of interesting, and I'll close with this if I could, Mr. Chairman, is the names they gave the investigations. Right? The Clinton investigation was the mid-year exam. But the investigation into possible coordination between the Trump campaign and Russia was Crossfire Hurricane. I like that. Just the name suggests a completely different approach and a completely different standard in how they're going to run the investigation. With that, I yield back, Mr. Chairman.
I thank the gentleman. The chair recognizes the gentlewoman.
Force his mandate. They'll have to police their workforces. Personal medical decisions, and order the receipt of a vaccination, or alternatively, be forced into bankruptcy. Now, some on the other side of the aisle think that the president's punishment doesn't go far enough. In fact, in the reconciliation bill draft currently being circulated on the other end of the Capitol, in the House of Representatives, Democrats are pushing to increase the fine to $70,000 per violation. Look, unvaccinated Americans are not the enemy. They're not the virus, and they're certainly not the enemy. Some are frontline doctors and nurses and other healthcare professionals who worked overtime throughout the pandemic, throughout the darkest of the dark hours of the pandemic, treating patients and saving lives. Others are workers whose industries were deemed essential and who showed up to work to ensure Americans kept having access to food and electricity and other essential items and services. Others still are simply neighbors, family members, and other loved ones who have supported friends, families, and entire communities. As Americans as a whole struggle through quarantines, shutdowns, financial difficulties, and social isolation. Let me reiterate, as I've said many times before, and I will continue to repeat, I believe the vaccine's development is nothing short of a miracle. It's an answer to prayer. I've been fully vaccinated, as has every member of my family, with my encouragement. But we certainly should not be forcing employers through the federal government, without congressional authorization or constitutional authority, putting employers in a position where they have to fire some of their most valuable and now increasingly hard to find workers. We shouldn't be threatening business owners with closure simply because they don't have any desire to police their workforce's personal medical decisions. It's not who we are as a country. I don't care whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or an independent or a libertarian. Americans as a whole don't believe that that's who we are. We're not into that kind of draconian micromanagement associated with the nanny state, nor are we into the excessive accumulation of power in the hands of the few, or even worse, in the hands of one person. Many simply cannot incur the cost.
We're going to close with Jay Dyer talking about different aspects of mind control and also Hollywood, the power and influence that Hollywood had over the years in creating a culture that perhaps we're now, and I will not perhaps, that we are definitely suffering under this Hollywood crap, you know. And so anyway, this is... Jay Dyer, and then I'm going to embed that full, you could say, interview that he has, but and you'll be able to listen to the whole thing, his whole, you know, you could say, diatribe or his whole lecture. It's a lecture. He does some really fine work in lecturing. So here we go with Jay Dyer finishing up the program. You hear the music. We'll be out of here then. But thank you for listening. But come in to thesecrettruth.com, and I'll have those click-offs. I'll have another click-off up from Michael Hoffman also. Okay. Thank you for hearing us and listening with us and staying with us over the years. Thank you, and God bless each and every one of you.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. And we've covered a lot of the global elite writings in the fourth hour of Alex Jones. And in the first hour, you heard Alex talking about the power of Hollywood to predictively program us to be prepared for the next layer or level of propaganda that they want to push. And that's something that I've covered in depth because I heard Alex talking about it so many years ago and did two books on that. So one of the books that we haven't covered that relates directly to this is Edward Bernays' book, Propaganda. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that, and then I want to go into how our opinions and our attitudes are formed by, as he says, people who we never see, who exist as a kind of invisible government. He even uses that kind of terminology in the book. And I want to, and we're going to talk about how Hollywood functions in that way and that close long-time linkage, that marriage between Hollywood and the CIA, the military, and various intelligence agencies. Bernays begins his famous book, and if you don't know, he's the relative of Sigmund Freud. And Bernays was at the Department of War, as it used to be called for a while before it became the Department of Defense, something that he renamed, so that he retitled to make it more palatable. And he begins his book on propaganda by noting that our attitudes are formed, he says. We are governed, he says, by, in a democratic society, by the masses are governed by, our minds molded by, our tastes formed by, our ideas largely made, he says, by men that we have never heard or seen. This is a logical result of the way in which our democratic society is organized. Vast numbers of human beings must cooperate in this manner if they are to live together in a functioning society. Thus, our invisible government, he says, is who runs our ideology. And then he goes on to talk about famous stories of made-up fake news. Fake news. Within the first few pages, he talks about fake news stories, and he talks about how a lot of the techniques that the propagandists and the social engineers and the people at Madison Avenue, the advertising men, if you've seen the movie, the show Mad Men, right, that's kind of taking place within that time frame when he's writing about people coming out of the OSS, the predecessor to the CIA, these ad men, going into working at places like Madison Avenue, Hollywood. He mentions Walter Lippmann coming out of the OSS precisely to do this kind of stuff. He mentions the wartime techniques and psychological warfare that were understood to be effective were then applied to mass media, pop culture, and the advertising world, and particularly to Hollywood. The new propagandists, he talks about, is mass media and the rise of mass media back when he was writing this, I guess, in the data when this was back in the, 30s, 40s, somewhere in there. And he talks about how movies would be an amazing way to propagandize people because movies are what the masses see. And it's movies that propagandize us even at times without us even knowing at a subconscious level. They program, in a way, our subconscious through the usage and manipulation of various archetypes. And so movies are, he says, a powerful form of propaganda. There's even a little joke he makes about how even presidents are manipulated and run by people in the background who manipulate and turn them through an invisible government to various ways that they may not have intended to go. So even presidents can be manipulated, he says, by propaganda when it's very scientifically powerful and precise. He talks about fashion trends. He talks about sexual mores and revolutions. All of these things can be done through pop culture and through movies to completely change the society. He goes into a lot of other things too, like ad campaigns, surveys. He says all of these things can be easily manipulated, faked, made up, right? And he says this is really the psychology of public manipulation and public relations, which is based on herd mentality and groupthink. And he says that his relative Freud was instrumental in helping to figure out how to utilize archetypal sexual things to manipulate and to sell things, right? Sex and advertising. Now, this should all be pretty self-evident to most of us, I think, right? And he mentions a lot of examples of things that he cooked up that were very successful, like soap sculptures and how this actually ended up selling a bunch of bars of soap as a test. And then he talks about how the idea of enlightened self-interest that was the modus operandi of the Rand Corporation would be sold upon everybody to promote the idea of consumerism. He says that all areas of life would be controlled by the ideas of commodification and business. Everything is business. And he says that the notion of advertising and advertising campaigns are essentially the exact same thing as propaganda. And he says that the only difference is that it's being used not to sell a war or change people's minds during warfare, but to sell the invisible government's ideology. And he's referring to people in the deep state. He's talking about the people that he was cohorts with coming out of the OSS and the CIA. And so today we heard in that clip that Alex played that's going around on Twitter, we heard Tucker Carlson talking about how the JFK files vindicate what people have been saying for so long, that this, quote, deep state had a key hand in the assassination of JFK. That's a huge vindication. In fact, I think the first or second, maybe the first time I came on the Fourth Hour to host almost 2 years ago, I did a whole talk on the CIA, the mafia, and JFK and their connections to Hollywood. There's Tucker giving this report. And guess what? It was everything I said, right? At least what we know so far in regard to Tucker's brief report there. It's exactly what I told you 2 years ago. And what's the point of this? Well, just like in that report, right, we had a lot of movies that told us this ahead of time. Oliver Stone's JFK basically told us this. We had movies for many decades, not just determining trends and determining our wants and our desires, but movies that were actually telling us that there was a deep state. Movies that were telling us that there was this apparatus of shadowy syndicate individuals, particularly people in the intelligence agencies that work for private families and for the international banking cartels that actually run things. And I was going to, you guys read my mind because I was going to go to Kubrick next. In fact, he goes on in this book to talk about that there's no more powerful propaganda than Hollywood itself. Now, Hollywood is kind of declined in modern times, but he says that Hollywood and movies are better than politics. There's a whole section, a whole chapter on movies and how movies manipulate us. And he says that where are we being manipulated to? Guess what? It's everything you've heard me talk about in all the other books that we've covered. He ends the book by talking about a managerial technocratic society is where it's all taking us. And so in order to get everybody to a managerial technocratic society, everybody needs to be in Plato's cave, needs to be remaining in the matrix, to be remaining fixed upon the shadows and the phantasms that dance upon the cave wall. That's Plato's ancient allegory in the Republic and in other places that explains our society that's dominated by mass media, Hollywood, the music industry as well. And in the last few years, this has more and more come out. We just saw a couple weeks ago, Britney Spears, yay, talking about handlers, talking about things that people in the alternative media have been talking about for 10, 15, 20 years. And now it's public knowledge. And we're going to get more into that when we look at some of the books that explain how it is that there's this deep relationship between Hollywood, the deep state, the CIA, other intelligence agencies, and how they not only program us, but they also predictively program us. We're going to go into that. Don't go anywhere. This is the Alex Jones Show. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. This is your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. We were talking about that relationship between Hollywood, the CIA, the deep state, and even organized crime in regard to people like Frank Sinatra and JFK and Sam Giancana, the head of the Chicago Mafia, and their relationship to Marilyn Monroe. right? And the love tryst that was going on there that might have contributed to some of the downfalls, well, at least in the case of Marilyn Monroe, perhaps to her downfall and death, because she might have been involved in some of this honey trap operation type of stuff to blackmail people. That's my theory on that. But regardless, Marilyn Monroe had a Department of Defense badge, and she had access to Wonderland Studios, which was over, if you go up Wonderland Avenue in the area of Hollywood, of Mulholland Drive, you get to this area, which was the premier film studio of that time back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and that was the Air Force's studio. And, you know, so many high-level people in Hollywood like Walt Disney and Jimmy Stewart, Cary Grant, they all had special access to this high-quality, super advanced film studio, which showed that even at that time there was a really deep marriage between what we could call the military-industrial complex or the deep state and Hollywood. So this is not something that's new. It didn't start developing in the 1980s, the 90s. It was always there. It just wasn't well known. And that's, as we said, why so many Hollywood people throughout all these decades had such close relationships with the intelligence agencies and were, in fact, spies. And I did maybe two episodes back of the Fourth Hour. If you search my name on Band.Video, you'll get all my lectures in my Fourth Hour. You'll find the one where we covered famous Hollywood spies. I'm not going to rehearse all that, but I'm just trying to illustrate that. Do you understand that this helps to explain and vindicate and back up the point that Alex was making the first hour about the fact that the movies and the actors at times are involved in serving other masters to propagandize us and to change culture. Culture creation. Culture manipulation. So again, Jimmy Stewart, Errol Flynn, Cary Grant, John Huston, Julia Child, Coco Chanel, Sonia Wiegert, Christopher Lee, Marilyn Monroe, Walt Disney, Ian Fleming, John Wayne even was really, we don't know for sure if he was in the OSS, but he really wanted to be in the OSS. What does that tell us? Well, that, again, shows us that there's this deep connection. And I'm not saying that everybody who was involved in that is a bad person. That's not the point. The point is that that was a way that people were co-opted into this to give the impression that you're going to be fighting for freedom, fighting for your country and all this kind of stuff. And it makes sense why they would believe that during the Cold War especially, or during World War II time, sure. But the point is that that relationship didn't go away. Right? After wartime, it's like, oh, okay, we don't do that anymore. Yeah, we're not interested in propaganda. We're just going to let people make the arts the way they want to do it. No, it's always a manipulated thing. And that's why I wrote a significant part of my first book on Ian Fleming, because he's one of the best examples of somebody from high-level naval intelligence in the British Empire writing all these Bond stories about real operations. And sometimes they're pretty close to what happened, but a lot of times he's adding in propaganda elements, right, and saying, oh, Spectre is doing this amorphous unknown group. No, the people running James Bond are Spectre in the real world, right? That's how it really works, because British intelligence set up the OSS and the CIA. Did you know that? Well, if you watch The Good Shepherd, another example of this revelation of the method in film, The Good Shepherd actually tells you that. Because the Matt Damon character representing the early founders of the CIA, or the OSS, they're trained by British intelligence, and British intelligence operatives tell them how to do it, how to set all this up, how to set up this inner deep state model, which is modeled on the round table models of the British Empire. Inner core steering committees, inner parties, what Quigley calls the Society of the Elect, modeled on Cecil Rhodes and Lord Rothschild's special secret society. On record in all of Quigley's books, well, not all of them, but all the relevant ones, Tragedy and Hope and Anglo-American Establishment. So that's how you control a vast empire, but give it the face of democracy and freedom. And you do it behind the scenes through a vast network of manipulators, controllers, the managerial class. Rothkopf has a book that it's a few thousand people that manage the world. And that's somebody coming out of the circles of Kissinger. That's not a conspiracy theorist. And so many movies have actually shown us this. That's the weird part, right? That's what Alex was talking about in the first hour, that revelation of the method, that the films actually show everybody how it really works. And there's a lot of theories as to why they do that. There's the idea that, well, from an occult perspective, you're giving a kind of lesser magic. You're doing lesser magic by saying what you're going to do. From a psychological warfare perspective, it prepares people. They get acclimatized to it. It becomes normalized, and they accept it when you roll out the propaganda down the road. Let me give you an example of a movie I just watched that we'll be doing a breakdown in the near future that's a little more detailed. But in 2016, a movie came out that kind of a minor, I think it was a theatrical release, science fiction film from Luke Scott, the son of Ridley Scott, who, of course, Ridley Scott's films, especially something like Prometheus, has a lot of revelation in it. Blade Runner, a lot of revelation in it. Done a lot of analyses and essays on Blade Runner and Prometheus, right? Telling us about panspermia and how the elite really view things. Well, in this 2016 movie, Morgan, with Anya Taylor-Joy, she plays this hybrid DNA-modified creature. And in this film, she is kind of going haywire, and they don't really understand why she's freaking out. But as we progress through the film's narrative, it turns out that she's an experiment where a corporation, a private corporation, has altered her DNA to make her a sort of a hybrid between human and synthetic silicon-based AI or whatever. And now the corporation patents and owns her. So, in other words, synthetic nanotech DNA, this is actually in the movie. This is, again, 4 years before the coup, 4 years before any pandemics and the stabbies. And we're told that this alteration now creates a new kind of being. And the corporation in the film is trying to perfect the perfect future human, to create an immortal human, to create a human being that is no longer bound by emotions. And I'll give you a little bit of a spoiler. In the film Morgan, it turns out that the main character, Morgan, the Anya Taylor-Joy character, she is actually slated to be killed because she's a defective model. And the assassin that is sent from the corporation to kill her is the new model, the one that doesn't have the flaws. In other words, the new human beings are the ones that will be modified to have no emotions, to have no feelings, to be able to kill without compunction. It's sort of a Spurg 9000 or something, right? Like no emotions. Everything is just like a machine. And so the model that still has human elements has to be gotten rid of. And this is really the ideology and the plan of the tech elite, of the transhumanists. They're open about that. I don't know for sure exactly what all the stabbies and the mRNA manipulation stuff is doing. I don't think any of us knows for sure. So there's a lot of theories, and it looks like in some of the cases there is experimentation at the genetic level going on for sure, right? The gene therapies are experiments. What exactly they're doing, we're trying to figure that out. We know it's having a lot of adverse effects. We know if you watch the documentary about people dying suddenly, for example. But there's also the possibility that beyond that, which has been reported on, and even by the World Economic Forum, they had a whole article on mRNA technology and how it's kind of experimental. Even they admit that, right? So they're telling you this. But in this movie, that's exactly what's going on. So it's amazing to me that this is in this film. I never really even paid attention to this film when it came out. I just thought it was another sci-fi film. And you're watching it, it's like, oh, they're actually telling us that –